This episode is brought to you in partnership with Life Kitchens. Life create kitchens to be lived in, planned around your life and the way you live it. Explore their unique ranges and book a design consultation for a personal and practical approach to kitchens. Visit life-kitchens.co.uk.
What I love seeing, a product, a concept in our heads, and then seeing come to fruition, boom. But then what's really nice for us is that it's the customer feedback. It's getting feedback from customers that said how the little Awana has transformed their day, how they've got love listening to radio again, or just love the music.
Hello, I'm Carol Annett from Country and Townhouse magazine. Welcome to the House Guest podcast, where I chat with experts from the world of interior design and decoration, the people behind the houses, hotels, shops and brands you see in glossy magazines like ours. If you listen on the Entail app, there's more information and images on the projects and people mentioned. And if you're doing up your own home, hopefully you'll pick up some tips for yourself. Today, I'm with Alan O'Rourke, who founded Rourke Radio, a family business creating fine audio products since 1986. And Alan, I was reading one of your reviews and they'd written, "Awesome audio and faultless usability. Its charms are hard to resist." And I think for me, that I've known about Rourke for quite a long time, mostly from the design side, because you've had some interesting collaborations.
Yes.
But tell us a bit about the history and how you got involved.
Good, it's me. Well, it goes back a long, long way to my father, really. I inherited my love of audio and design from my dad. He, when he left school, he took up an apprenticeship with a fine furniture maker. And so that was his trade. So he worked in producing, you know, back in the day when most furniture was made over here. And that led on, I guess, into him getting involved with the TV and radio, because of in those days, TV cabinets, radiograms were all made out of wood. Now they were pieces of furniture. Now the TV in the corner of your room wasn't made out of plastic like it is now, but most of them would have a nicely crafted wooden cabinet around them, with the cathode ray tube would be inserted in the middle. But it was and some of them, if you remember, even had like nice doors on the front, so you could close the front up, so it looked like a fine cabinet. But that led him into the early days of the fledgling British audio industry, and it was something he'd always been interested in. So I just grew up surrounded by all sorts of bits of audio equipment, and it was just a passion that we grew up sharing together.
But you played a few musical instruments as well, didn't you?
That was really good, because in later life, he joined a company called Darris Arbiter, who then were the importers for Fender guitars, and they had their own Heyman drums. And yet again, I used to go to work with him. They had an office in Southend-on-Sea where they made their Sound City amplifiers. And it was just like a schoolboy dream going there. And so even in our school band, I started playing guitar quite young. We had all the prototype equipment that they never actually put into production. But for a schoolboy band, we had some really nice equipment to play on. And it's something that, I've just carried through. So playing the guitar and, I used to play in pub bands and never made it to the big time.
What was your band called?
Zephyrus. Our school band is called Zephyrus, and actually, strange enough, our sales director here, his daughter's called Zephyr, Zephyrus, and we used to put on school concerts, and it was just that feeling of we had a great time. I was lucky. It was just nice to share this passion. And what happened was me and my dad, we got into making speakers, I guess, as a hobby. And so we'd have, the idea was with the hi-fi enthusiast was to create the sound of that performance in your lounge, the band or and you used to buy back then you'd buy these records of, sound effects like Concord taking off and the Flying Scotsman coming through your lounge. And it was just to recreate that realistic sound. So I think it was in 1985, 86, we'd been doing this for a while, and we thought, you know, friends and family said, you're doing some really good stuff. You should think about setting that up as a business. And so we worked on a few designs and then took them to market, started taking them around the local hi-fi shops, and started getting a really, really good feedback. So we really turned our passion, you know, for sound and making stuff into a little business, which grew, you know, which grew from 1985 and grew until, you know, I think what really, where it changed was we saw, was when TV came along, the focus came away from sound onto television. It all went visual. People were looking at having a big TV in their home. I mean, that was back in the day when a big plasma TV, 42-inch plasma TV, would cost you £5,000 or £6,000.
Yeah.
And you know, I've said many times before that, you know, it was cool back then to spend, this would be probably the turn of the millennium, I suppose. It was cool back then to spend £5,000 or £6,000 on a TV, but spending £5,000 or £6,000 on a hi-fi system, people would think you were crazy. My background was in engineering. When I left school, I took an apprenticeship with Ford Motor Company and worked with them for 5 or 6 years. And then I went on to work for Marconi and MK Electronics. So my background was in still making things. So I was an engineer, a tool maker. And but as I say, this hobby we shared together was something we did during our spare time, weekends, and it was so just something that we both enjoyed. And so I said in 1986, we formed Ruark, and then we brought our first products to market, which were the Sabre and the broadsword.
They were the speakers, just
high fidelity speakers. They were designed to, you know, produce full life dynamics and really bring the sound of the artist into your room, and then you have a good matching amplifier. Turntables back then, turntables were big, and you know, people would spend, you know, a lot of money recreating that sound of the performance in their living rooms. So we did the hi-fi, and we had as in most businesses, a bit of a roller coaster ride. Sometimes you have good times and you have sort of bad times, but the market started to change with the advent of when it went more for, you know, what we call audiovisual. So people concentrated more on the visual, with films, and even with VHS. You know, you could back then had like Dolby surround sound, and you'd have, you know, big TV, and then you'd have speakers all around you. But the focus definitely went on more onto the visual side. And so we started to sort of see the market changing, the move away from hi-fi to video. And but on the back of the BBC started to promote DAB in the UK, digital audio broadcasting. We just saw the opportunity to develop a really nice quality DAB radio. I mean, for us, it was just like a move on. So we then developed the first generation R1. So we started working on that about 2004. And to us, it was just like building a little hi-fi speaker with the same elements, a nice little wooden cabinet, nice, good quality, full range drive unit, good little amplifier. And the idea was initially we were going to sell it just through our audio stores, our hi-fi stores, of which there's still, you know, a good few around. But not being in the market and not really having, obviously, there were other brands around there, like Roberts Radio and a few other brands that were all well known. We knew we had to make the product that looked good, something that would catch the eye. You know, something we've always been aware of, even with our speakers. You know, we were not a big company even back then in terms of this. There were companies like Mission and Kef had been there a long time, and they would put a lot of money into advertising. We really, as a small company, had to sort of make products which stood out on their own merit, I suppose. Really had, you know, the design with the catch the eye. And we knew we had to do the same with the little R1. So
where did you get your inspiration from for the design?
Strange enough, just through looking, you pick up design keys from, you know, design ideas from all sorts of places, but what I've always disliked is products covered in buttons. And so at the time, I think it was Samsung, or was it, I think Motorola or one of those, I just launched a little flip-top phone that had this sort of like a, almost like an old-fashioned keypad in it. And I looked at this and thought, I really like that. It just, so it was the idea of grouping the buttons and putting them into this circular form with a rotor dial in the center, the circular control with it. And that, so we developed what we called rotor dial as the control system. And that's been developed and evolved all through the products. And it's a nice, you know, it's a feature that's now across all of our products. So you see, you know, we like to make products where people look at them, and they know straight away what it is. It's, you know, something about it. It's a bit like, I'm a big car fan. I love cars. And you know, I think it's the way you'll see a BMW or a Porsche, when straight away you know what it is. And I think that, you know, I like to think that with our products, whether you're looking at the R1 or the R7, you can see that heritage running all the way through. So it's just little key things. When we started looking at the design, we didn't like, and also very clean design. When I was looking initially at ideas, the speaker on the front, and we had the display, obviously, for the, you know, the readout of the station name. It was also, we were playing around thinking, well, how can we make, putting it all on the front of the product, it looked very cluttered and messy. So that's when we decided to put the controls on the top. So most people, you go up to the product and you're looking down on it. It's very easy. This makes it nice, the front, and also being on top, when you're pressing any of the buttons, it's nice and firm. You're not sort of pushing it from the front and it moves the product rocks back. And that evolved into the style of the R1. But for us, what was really encouraging was that when we started putting into the press and putting out press releases, the feedback we got from outside of the audio market, it was interesting to see that now we developed this product for our audio stores to sell, but actually we got a lot more interest from the likes of, you know, John Lewis, the B1, and Selfridges. And it was really refreshing. And that's what opened our eyes to the world outside of the small, you know, audio enthusiasts, into the more general world of audio.
You've also done a collaboration with Linley, Fine Furniture. How did that come about?
They approached us, actually. I think that they were, you know, I mean, obviously they were, I think we obviously, we're on quite a few people's radar these days. You know, we had this lovely quote where we first launched with the R1, I think it was a Telegraph, called us the Aston Martin of DAB radios. And I think we'll use that forever, because I think it's, I mean, it's just, because I think straight away, it just says how we feel. It's what we want to do. It's, and I think that a few of the guys there had heard of us. One of the directors at Linley is a keen audio enthusiast himself. And they approached us and said, would we like to work on the collaboration? Of course, I know Linley from old. I mean, the quality of their work is amazing. And we said yes straight away. And so we've done the R1, which I understand that every batch we've made, they're made in small batches, you know, there's sort of 50, 100 pieces at a time, but they've all sold through very quickly. And we've just done a version of our R5, which looks stunning. So yes, it's something that we're going to keep. We would love to do an R7 with them, but I think lockdown has slowed things up a little bit, as it has for everybody. So just in terms of communication.
Yeah.
But
what's the R7?
The R7 is our radiogram. It's the larger. So the R7 is, if you check out the website, you'll see it's like a modern take on, you know, on the radiogram. It's a piece of furniture. It has spindle legs. Now, I think we wanted the R7 really is there as a statement piece for the rest of the range. You know, we've always said that, you know, whether you're buying an R1, the entry to our range, or the top of the range, the R7, it's the same care and attention that's gone into all of them. We've always said as well that really, as we've always done with our audio equipment, hi-fi speakers, that we make products for ourselves, really. You know, we make products that,
yeah.
Yeah, that's it. We make products that, you know, we ourselves would want to own. And that's why we find it, you know, it's difficult It's easier, actually. It's easier making the expensive products than it is the entry-level ones, because you don't want to compromise. And although I suppose many people would say that the R1 at £230 is hardly entry, but for us it is. It's, it really, because you build into that price and producing something still that's beautiful and desirable is it's still quite difficult.
Yeah. And what about other collaborations, Alan, that you're working on?
Other collaborations, well, obviously we've done some stuff in the past with Pure Evil, the graffiti artist, Charlie Edwards. We plan to do some more of those in the future. We deal with Harrods, and a couple of years ago we did some R7s with him, the Gradio Brown, where he put his graphics to the outside, and we put them on displays as sort of one-offs, and they sold through really quickly. And as soon as they went on the floor, they sold straight away, because they were works of art as much as lovely piece of audio equipment. Also, an area that's really growing for us is the hospitality sector. We work with the Bishop being chosen as a brand standard for iconic hotels, who include Jute and Glen and Clevedon House. We also just applied Watergate Bay Hotel down in Cornwall. So that's an area which we like. These boutique-y, high quality hotels are choosing our products more and more for their rooms, because I guess people, when they go away, want to go away and stay somewhere. They want to stay somewhere where everything in that room is beautiful. So hospitality, it's been a bit slow last year, of course, because of the pandemic. But strangely enough, a lot of these hotels have still been spending money, and while it's been quieter, doing the rooms up, improving them.
You don't need to take your radio with you, because you'll have a lovely Ruart radio in the room.
That's right. That's right. and people see them there. I mean, it's surprising. Even the Savoy, the amount of people that we sit when we get that registration to come in, they said, we sort of ask, where did you see the product? A lot of the people say, I stayed at the Savoy. I saw it there, because they're eye catching. I think that's the same. People shop with their eyes. They see something catches their eye, and they think, I'm the same. I see a jacket or a shirt. You wander over, pick it up, and you think, that's nice. And then you're going to investigate a bit more, or decide you were going to plunge in by there and then.
Yeah. What is it you're most proud about, Alan?
What I love seeing is I've seen a product come from a concept in our heads, or my head, and just working, and then seeing it come to fruition, boom. But then what's really nice for us is that it's the customer feedback. It's getting feedback from customers that said how the little R1 has transformed their day, how they've got love listening to radio again, or it's love listening to music. And I think that now, I mean, when we first started the radio side of the business, radio, the intention was to keep on doing the high fidelity speakers and do the radios alongside. But we've got washed away, I guess, with the success of the small audio products. But we probably get more people now tell us that they've never heard their music sound so good when they're listening to the R1 or the R5 than we ever did when we were making the high fidelity speakers. Because I think that the trouble with hi-fi enthusiasts is that they're always looking for the fault in the system. They're not listening to music, they're just listening to the system and picking all that violin didn't sound quite right, sounded a bit screechy. Or do you know what I mean? It's a very... But these products we make now, you put them on your sideboard, you plug them in, within a few minutes, they're up and running, and switch it on, and you've got this rich, expansive sound.
Yeah.
And all the time we get people just saying how much they like them, how much they're enjoying them. So that for us is good. I like the fact where we've got an export market that's growing strongly at the moment. We're exporting out to... now out to Singapore, Malaysia, in Indonesia. Korea is one of our very best export markets as well. We haven't even touched America. Lots of interest from America. But we are just now, we're still a small company, and we're just doing it stage by stage. We don't want to, I think to start, to run before you can walk. So we've every year since 2006, we've grown.
And what about the future for Ruark? What are you working on for the future?
More of the same. We're working on new generation products. I think that with the new R1 that we've just launched, it's been a progression from the old one. It would have been very easy to run the Mark 1 to the Mark 2 to the Mark 3 to do a Mark IV, which was the same but a bit improved. But we feel that with the new R1, the Mark IV, we've taken a slightly different direction. We've evolved the design on further. And as I said, it was slightly brave because people loved the old one, but I have to say, reaction to the new one, we wanted to go a little bit even more contemporary. I'd say, you know, inspiration would have been the Eames and that sort of look, I suppose. The older models would have perhaps really, really harked back to the 50s and 60s. This one, I think, is more, even more modern than that. So it's not really a copy of that. It's just a reinterpretation of that period. And I think that there is, you know, people talk about good design, it is timeless. During the 60s and 70s, I think at the moment we're seeing it to be people are moving, are liking products from that period. But also there was an awful lot of bad design in that period as well. The stuff that we're liking now is stuff that was good design back then. Because it was good design, it's carried on. It's so much like today. So really, at the moment, we're looking at some moving the design forward, but still keeping that Ruark-ness to it. You know, so yeah, again, we still want, so rather than doing something radically different, it's got to be moved on, but not so much so that people think, well, what's that? You still need to know it's a Ruark product.
Yeah.
That's important.
Keep the essence of the brand. Well, I'm sure you'll manage it. Alan, thanks so much. It's been really, really lovely to talk to you and hear more about it. And I'm very excited to go and play with my radio and see
where
I'm
going. Thank you. There you
go. I'm not sure my ears are going to be as well tuned as yours, but I will give you some feedback and let you know.
Lovely stuff. Thank you, Carol.
Thanks for listening to House Guests from Country and Townhouse Magazine with me, Carol Annett. Don't forget to subscribe to the series on iTunes or Entail, where you can also find images, links and notes to enhance each episode. In the meantime, you can follow me on Instagram at Carol W. Annett and keep up to date on all the podcast news and show notes online at countryandtownhouse.co.uk/podcast. And please don't forget to rate, review and subscribe. For more news and views in the world of interior design, sign up to our newsletter at countryandtownhouse.co.uk, and why not listen in to our sister podcast, Breakout Culture, with Lord Ed Vasey and Charlotte Fruity Metcalf.